The first time she met Gabriel O'Keefe was in a bar in Soho. 10 o'clock at night, standing room only. 10 years as a mother's help, and she'd never once been interviewed for a new position by the father of the household, let alone in a bar. In the past, it would have been a no-brainer. She wouldn't have gone, knowing something else would come along, but it always did. Only now, in the space of 6 months, she'd become unemployable. The Sowerbys had seen to that. Last November, she'd moved out of their grey stone mansion in Knockanveen, owed 1 month's pay, and having learnt a lesson about how vicious an animal humans can be when they feel threatened. And nothing is more threatening than something that exists outside of one's understanding. Something alien. It was only down to her sister's efforts that she had a job interview at all. She was early, and had the advantage of observing Gabriel as he arrived. Tall and big built, a tree of a man. The crowd falling back to let him pass. She knew it was him, because he wasn't wearing a suit or a tight pair of pastel trousers but cargo pants, a t-shirt washed to off-white and a hunter's vest. He looked out of place, against a backdrop of black marble and blue spotlights. Or perhaps she imagined that, knowing he was a tree surgeon. The crush of people didn't concern him. A man of that brute size cuts through a crowd like a cluster of gnats. But he was giving off a bronze green of intense focus. Verdigris. A beautiful colour of aged copper spires and church bells. She saw it when people were completing crosswords or engaged in deep discussion, setting the world to rights. It was the feeling of being alive and present, of searching, wondering, and scheming. She wondered what was causing the verdigris to rise from the crown of his head. What was once a childhood game to decipher how people were feeling, even as they tried to hide it, was now second nature. She decided Gabriel's bronze green was fascination for an urban setting, when he clearly belonged out in the open, under a galactic sky, where he could let loose the spinnaker of his chest and unfold his full size. She waved him over to her spot by the edge of the bar. As he greeted her, the lighting created an interesting optical illusion, his left eye a sun-warmed hazel, his right the hard summer green of unripe apples. But as they spoke, she realised it wasn't a trick of the light, and that his eyes were mismatched.
"My wife, Susie," he said, leaning forward to put the words in her ear, "lost someone she was close to recently. And it's hit her hard. I go away a lot. I need someone stable and trustworthy to take care of the house and Daniel, my boy."
The word trustworthy reached her on a fizzing bed of red embers. She bit back the familiar surge of injustice. Let him have his say. She'd promised Billy she'd hear him out.
"Susie insists she's fine, but she isn't. So I need someone with a finer sense, I don't know, an instinct for diplomacy."
He was struggling now, wiping his thumb along his hairline, eyes focused past her shoulder, looking to the script he'd obviously rehearsed in his head.
"I can see from your CV that you've got years of experience and could probably do the job in your sleep, but..."
"You need me to be indispensable without your wife realizing it." He looked at her, properly for the first time, and his face opened up with a grin.
"Exactly. We just need someone organized and discreet and trustworthy."
That word again. Her sister had told them about the Sowerbys. "I'm not a thief." The same words she'd uttered, disbelieving, faced by a hostile semicircle of Sowerbys in the hall, not the kitchen or the sitting room, but the hallway, as if they intended to march her out there and then. "Every week, Mrs. Sowerby, my last employer, would leave the cleaner's cash on the console by the front door. Then 1 week, it disappeared. They decided to accuse me, even though I'd lived with them for almost a year by then."
"She's lying. I can see it. Anna took the money,"
Martha had said, but behind her booming outrage, there had been empty air,
No billowing red anger or weighty clumps of brown disgust. All an act. And there was 10-year-old Freddy, looking anywhere but at Anna. Guilt is the same deep brown of disgust, but it doesn't appear in thick clods. Instead, it shivers above a person, like a tattered cloth in a breeze, stained with the rusty dread of discovery.